So last time we started talking about Suzy and the particle content, and I told you that when you have supersymmetry, you just every fermion acquires a scalar partner, and every scalar or bosonic particle acquires a fermionic partner. Okay? So for the standard model, these guys that you see here, these are the usual standard model particles, the Higgs, and these are the Suzy particles or sparticles, as they're called, with the same charges. Okay. Now the question is, how do these particles interact? And for that, we'll have to write down the superpotential and all the interaction terms. Now, there is, as I said last time, Suzy is a huge topic, okay? So I won't go into details of how the Suzy algebra, the generators, and all that, okay? Because we really don't have the time. It takes several lectures to do. You'll just have to take my word for it that this is how it works. And if you want, from a more phenomenological standpoint, yes. I'm following a more or less, there is a supersymmetry primer. Which is a summary of Stephen Martin, not the actor, wrote this, and it's written from 97, okay? And it's a review. As I told you, Suzy doubles the particles, okay? And we talk about Suzy multiplets. So, and before I talk about the specifics of the standard model, let's remind where we stopped last time, which is when you have a Suzy matter multiplet, what is called matter multiplet, you have the scalar field component, you have the fermionic component, and you have this funny term F, which is basically and what is called an auxiliary field, and it's needed, it's not a propagating degree of freedom, but it's necessary for the supersymmetric algebra to be complete and everything to work out off-shell, okay? Because off-shell, the fermions acquire more degrees of freedom. So, just to remind people, we're talking about, this is a complex scalar, okay? This is a Weyl fermion, left-handed fermion. And this is a dimension 2 scalar, okay? I mean mass dimension 2, because ordinary scalars have one dimension. And it doesn't have a kinetic term, so this is not a propagating degree of freedom. So, there is also a gauge multiplet, that have the following structure. Now you have the spin one, the usually the vector bosons, and then you have the overall index for the structure of the gauge group. Then you have things that we usually denote by lambda, and these are what they call the gauginos, the partners of the gauge bosons, okay? And these are, again, adjoints of the group, that the A mu is the carry of the force carrier row. And similarly to here, there is an additional degree of freedom, D, this is the D term, or auxiliary field, that again makes sure that the Suzy algebra is complete. Okay? So basically, every standard model particle that you have will have this type of structure that you see over there. Okay? And because, so the other thing that I will be talking about for the discussion, that's why we stick to Weyl fermions, because these are essentially the building blocks of super multiplets, there is the reducible spinor representation. So they are more useful than Dirac representation, where they have the full gamma matrix. Okay, so that's why these charge assignments there correspond to val. Yeah.
For any fermion, we'll have a scalar.
Mm-hmm.
But for the scalar, how do we know whether it's going to be a left-handed wild fermion or a right-handed wild fermion?
It's always left-handed, by definition. Okay, so that's a good question, and it's always left-handed by definition of the SUSY algebra, and how these things need to transform under when you do the transformation. As I said, SUSY is actually kind of a space-time symmetry because it makes a scalar. A scalar does not transform under a boost, right? While a fermion transforms under a boost. So a left-handed fermion has specific properties under transforming under boost. So this is what determines the SUSY transformation determines that it's a left-handed guy and not a right-handed guy. Okay? And what we call left and right is conventions you can imagine, but it's one type of the two. Okay. Good. Okay. So now we need to write interactions for these guys. And again, without proof, I will just state that in order to write, let's not talk about gauge interactions for a second. Let's talk about Yukawa interactions and general mass terms that you can write down. So interactions between this type of multiplet, matter multiplets, their properties are described by what is called a superpotential. And is usually denoted by this letter W. So you can have terms that looks like this, and I'm writing the general thing, okay? That doesn't mean that all of these terms will appear for the standard model fields. Okay. 1/6, k, phi, k, okay, this. Okay, notice now, first of all, so phi follows, the multiplet follows the dimensionality of the scalar, so this is dimension 1. So 3, so this W has dimensions of mass cubed. Okay, and this will help us generate the ordinary Lagrangian that we know from the other particles, okay? So this is like a Yukawa interaction between different multiples. Notice that there is no dagger, and that has to do with the properties of the SUSY algebra, and this is what is known as a holomorphic potential. Okay? So we have phi I, phi j, phi k, these are like Yukawa couplings. Now, this guy is a master, and this guy is what we know as a tadpole. So t here has, so this mass term has one mass dimension, okay? It's not the usual thing that you have. Remember, this is mass cubed. And this guy is what is known as a tadpole term. You can only, t has units of mass squared, and you can only write it down as phi is a singlet. So for the standard model, this is not there. So for the standard model, you can only have terms like this. So this is a general thing, a very compact way to write all interactions between renormalizable, okay, relevant and renormalizable interactions. I'm not talking about hard dimensional operators here. I'll give you, be able to write the Lagrangian for how particles and sparticles interact. Okay? And, yes?
Where does the potential have dimension mass?
Yeah, this is that's why you have to take my word for it, because I won't sit down and prove you there is a compact way to write a super multiplet that involves Lagrangian Grassmannian variables. You must have seen it in N equals 4. I don't know. Okay, I'm gonna tell Pedro. So, so the point is that these Grassmannian variables have mass dimensions. So when you write down the superpotential, you have this form d squared theta, where this is, so you have the usual d for theta, d for x, and then there is these Grassmannian variables that are usually denoted by theta, and then the potential appears like that. Okay.
So we have an additional fragment.
So there is an additional kind of like mass that fixes the mass dimensions, okay? So there is, so there are ways to transform between the different things. So that's why I'm not, and this is, I have to remember if this is the right format. The bottom line is this, there is a, this is a compact way to write all the interactions, okay? By introducing these Grassmannian variables. So now you can generate a Lagrangian from this superpotential, and the superpotential will have the kinetic term, the usual kinetic terms, okay, plus there's going to be terms so that go like this. D phi i, d phi k, psi I, psi k. And then, so phi's now are the scalars, so these are the big phi's, the full super multiplet. Now this phi is the scalar field, okay? And then you have terms that look like this. W d phi squared. So this is, so the derivatives of W with respect to the scalar field introduce the interactions. So this term here is what gives rise to u kappas. Okay? So if I take the derivative with respect to phi I and phi k here, I will have phi j left over, a scalar. So it will give me this term, for example, contains a phi j. Phi k here, sorry, what am I writing? Okay, phi j, y I, phi k. So this term generates the Yukawa interactions. Okay, if one of them is the Higgs, for example, and the rest are the quarks, it will have the Yukawa interactions. This term is just interactions of scalars. Okay, so remember yesterday, on Monday, when you, someone asked, okay, I was writing this diagram, so I had the Higgs, and then I had the top, and this was y top, right? One part of y top. So this was going like y top squared. And I drew the same diagram with the top inside, and someone asked, well, why does this coupling grow like y top squared? So you see it from this term. So the scalars interact with the quadratic, of the, with the square of the u kappas. So this is imposed again by the Suzy algebra, okay? So you see here that this is y top squared as well. Okay. So you can go through the supersymmetry in fact is quite constrained, okay? So you cannot write whatever you want. So as you see, also supersymmetry imposes that the Yukawa couplings are the same between particles and particles. Now, again, without proving, to this we need to add. Let me go up. So we need to write the gauge interactions. Okay, and those have terms like this, is minus 1/8 sum A GA squared. So basically, these are quadratic interactions between the scalar fields. And this is just the gauge coupling here. And there is also now interactions with the Gauginos that go like this. Alpha, you have G alpha. T, this tau here, this tau, is the generator of the group, okay? Side dagger, sorry. Minus phi dagger psi I lambda, okay? And the point of this is, So you see here, this looks very similar to this, but for every scalar here, you substitute one fermion, and the gauge boson is there is also the gauge boson that is substituted by a Gaugean. Okay. So if you notice, this term here and this term right here have something in common. So if I were to write, for example, in ordinary QED, I have a fermion, okay, psi, and I write the coupling to the photon. In order to write the corresponding supersymmetric coupling, I need to substitute two of the particles in that diagram with their Suzy partners. Okay, so that means that now this fermion here turns, into a scalar. And then what is emitted here is a Gaugino, which usually goes like that with a tilde. Okay? So same thing for the U-kappas. For the U-kappas, every time you write the U-kappa, you substitute two of the particles with the Suzy partners. And that will give you the way particles interact. So, now going back to the standard model, okay? The fact that the Suzy superpotential has to look this way, the fact that it's holomorphic, tells you something about the Higgs. So if you remember, so far, we've been writing U-kappas the following way. So you see the charge assignment of the Higgs. So if I want to write the down-type masses, I need to write a coupling that looks like this. Right? But because the potential is holomorphic, I cannot have the dagger. What does that mean? It means I need to introduce a new partner to the Higgs. So what ended up happening is that here I need to call this the uptype quark because this has the right charge assignment to the uptype Higgs because this will couple to the generate the U-kappas for the up sector of the quarks, and then I need to add this other guy, which has the opposite charges here, to make sure that I give leptons and down-type quarks masses. Otherwise, I wouldn't be able to do this. Another way to see this is through anomalies, which you really haven't talked about, is because if I have, so because now I have a fermion partner to the Higgs, that will introduce SU2 and hypercharge anomalies, and in order to cancel them, I need to add another fermion with the opposite charges. Okay? But, I mean, there are... So, in Suzy, there are two Higgs doublets by structure. So that means now, given that, the full superpotential in the standard in the MSSM, or the minimal supersymmetric standard model, contains the following. So we have U-kappas for the uptype quarks, and this is up. You have the corresponding U-kappas for the downtype quarks, QD. You have the... you have the lepton U-kappa. Now notice that there is one more thing I can write down, and there is actually not just one more thing, there are several things we can write down. So there is a mass term that I can write down, because this H up H down is now a singlet, so I can form a singlet from that. And this is the supersymmetric mass for the Higgs. So the question is, so this will give a mass of the Higgs at the scale mu. So the question is, what is that scale? It doesn't have to be related with the TeV, it can be anything because Tsuji is unbroken. So this is what is known as the mu problem of the MSSM. So you start seeing now the laundry that comes with supersymmetry. So you need to explain why mu is of order TeV. So this is known as the mu problem. Okay? And people have found ways to make this work. So they found additional symmetries. So you can introduce, make H up and H down charged under different symmetries, discrete symmetries. So then you write it as a scalar. So there are ways to do that. But you start seeing that the minimal thing has some model, additional model built in it to make it work. Okay? Yeah?
And the problem is to, because the Lissis are, the mass of the Higgs has to be something like what?
Yeah, 100 TeV, 100 GeV, sorry. And this mass, because it's supersymmetric, I can write it, it can be anything. Planck scale, it won't be radiative, it won't receive any radiative corrections, but a priori, I don't know what it is. Right?
But I can also, I mean, just like the way we do it for the standard model, can I not introduce that as a parameter? And say mu is a parameter.
Can. Yeah, this is what people did. I mean, and then you can also find the symmetry to forbid it and then generate it at the right scale. Yeah, you're right. I mean, you can. It's perfectly fine to introduce it as a parameter. But so it is kind of, this is more of an aesthetics problem than an ordinary hierarchy problem. It's true. Okay. So now, so this is the first odd term we can write down. Okay. So now, question. Is there something else you notice in the charge assignments, especially from the Higgs? So we introduce this new Higgs H down. Look at these charges and look at what else in that table has similar charges. Exactly. So if I'm allowed to write down everything that's allowed by symmetries, I need to add more things. And those things look actually quite funny. So now, we need to add the following beautiful things. So basically, every time I see an H down, I just plug in the lepton, the left-handed lepton, the lepton doublet, okay? So I have LLE, I have some other prime here, some UCAVA, I have QDL, I have UDD. Okay, that's another thing you can write down, because also I didn't say about that, I cheated, because now you have scalar quartz, so you can write this down, this is a triplet. And then there is also another mass term, let's call it kappa, LHR. Okay? What do these terms have in common? What symmetry do they break? Just to be more precise. And? There's one more global symmetry. What is it? One is lepton number. Other?
Is lambda the case, you know?
No, lambda is a UCAVA, sorry. Sorry, it's a tuple. I should have picked a different name.
I didn't know how to write, so I was like, sorry. No, this is the super potential, okay? So the question is, what do these operators break? What's in and this one? No, not that one. No, that breaks lepton. This one and this one.
There's one more global symmetry that you guys, I mean, there's lepton number and? No.
Baryon?
Yeah, baryon number, people, baryon number. So it breaks baryon number. So what does it mean? It means that the proton wants to decay. So you see, every time we add more stuff, we make the proton decay, poor proton. I mean, So this is a huge problem because remember, okay, this is the middle one. I need to raise it. So these things need to be forbidden because they cause proton decay. Okay, so you can take this guy, for example, this UDD. So you have the remember the our favorite particle, the proton here. You take UDU, this gets converted to a used particle, okay? And then from this diagram, this U can go to this goes to an E plus, and then you have U bar, and then you have this guy here, U gives you a pi naught. Again, same problems we had with guts. But now, remember, we need to add these particles at the TeV scale, not at the gut scale. So we really need to get rid of them, otherwise the proton decays super quickly. And this is where
our parity comes in. Okay, so this is, in order to fix this problem, need what is known as our parity. Okay, this will be part of your tutorial.
Yes.
Okay.
Also, the mediator's particle has to be in second or third category.
Yes. Yes. I didn't say that because they are anti-commuting. I mean, yes, it has to be
S.
Charm.
No S.
No.
S.
I think it's fine, right? S.
Because it's
UDD. It's UDD, you're right, sorry, you're right, yeah. Okay? Has to do with that commuting of the
particles. You will suffer through that during the tutorial,
okay? So you need to add a new symmetry. At the moment you add that symmetry, should I tell them the charges, or do you want to tell them?
I'll tell them.
So what happens is, so this R parity
has the following property.
So every charge, every particle of the minimal supersymmetric standard model, so you have R parity charges. It goes like, it's a discrete symmetry, and it goes like -1, -3, baryon number minus lepton number of the particle plus, wait, is it 3s? Yes, 2s, sorry. Twice the spin of the particle. So if you plug it in, you will see that particles of the standard model have charge +1. While Suzy's these particles have charge -1. So this tells you that if I write a vertex, like what we did before with QED, So let's say again you have a fermion here. Say you have a quark, a squark, and a Higgsino, okay? Higgsino, actually, this one's just this. This way. And a Higgsino here. You make this up. So the point of this now is that every time you have a normalizable couple, you can only produce them in pairs, so that this is a singlet. So this is minus, minus, plus. So this asymmetry has another consequence. It makes, because you have to only produce them in pairs, it means the lightest one has nothing to decay to, because the lightest guy can only decay to standard model particles, and that will break our parity. So a great consequence, actually, of the fact that you fix the problem with proton decay is that the lightest Suzy particle is stable. And this is what is known as a WIMP. Okay, weakly interactive massive particles, because usually the lightest particles are the ones that have the least charge. So the WINO, the Higgsino, the BINO. So they become a great dark matter candidate, and you will discuss this when Chumu comes in. So you have a dark matter candidate now. So Suzy has a nice feature. It solved the hierarchy problem for us, and at the same time provided us for a natural dark matter candidate, which is fantastic. Another thing that this tells you, that every time I collide, let's say at the LHC, I collide two protons. So I have the proton coming, proton comes out. I need to produce, the particles need to be produced in pairs. Okay? So, for example, let's say that the protons collide, you produce gluinos, the partner of the gluon, because usually they are the heavy. First of all, they have the biggest charge, so they have the largest production cross-section. So you have gluinos coming out, and they start decaying to standard model particles, but eventually they will decay to the usual, this is called the LSP. And this escapes the detector because it's also neutral. So it escapes the detector and becomes a missing energy signature. So this is how people do dark matter searches at the LHC and Suzy searches. So you expect, you look for these decay products and you look for the missing energy. This is a telltale signature of Suzy. Okay?
What is the mass scale of the lightest
Suzy particle? Yeah, so ideally you want to be at around 100 GeV, and we can discuss. And then, as Jung-woo will explain, given if it has weak couplings and it's in thermal equilibrium in the early universe, when the interactions freezes out, because these are weak interactions, at some point they become out, they go out of equilibrium with the rest of the standard model particles, the leftover abundance matches the measured abundance that we see of the dark matter. So this is what is known as the WIMP miracle. So this is why actually Suzy became so, one of the reasons, one additional reasons why Suzy became so popular, because it naturally explains the dark matter. So you add the particle at around the mass of the Higgs, 100 GeV, and poof, dark matter comes out as a consequence. Once you fix one problem that Suzy has in principle. Yeah.
But if that's the case, then if the LSP solves the dark matter,
mm-hmm.
explains the dark matter abundance,
yeah.
at the same time it should be visible with the LHC.
Yes, so it's a problem. We discussed that at the end today. Okay, so we have 20 minutes. The last thing I will show you is LHC constraints. So hold that thought. Yes, you're right. We should have seen it. This is all, anyway. Let me continue and then we'll come back to that, okay? That's an excellent question. It is an excellent question. Where is Suzy? Good. So far, I've told you about supersymmetric interactions, okay? So we haven't, I've told you the general idea that you need the particles to be at the TV scale to explain the Higgs and everything. But we need to break Suzy, because otherwise, if Suzy was exact, it means that particles and particles should be degenerate. And that doesn't happen. So the question is, how do we need to break Suzy? And this is a huge topic. Usually people break Suzy, and again, you have to work back my work for it, by giving F and D terms, these auxiliary fields first. So this will break the Suzy algebra, because they are essential part of the Suzy transformations. The moment you do that, though, these F terms and D terms introduce, so if you do it in the for the standard model fields, this introduces negative mass corrections to some of the standard model fields. So it makes, for example, some of the quarks tachyonic. That means you break color, you have all sorts of funny stuff happening. So that means that spontaneous symmetry breaking in the standard model itself, this is what is called direct symmetry, does not work. So people need to do, when people talk about Suzy breaking, they talk about mediated. Suzy breaking. So you have another sector where you can break its color, you can do all sorts of funny things. This is where you break Suzy, and then radiative corrections from that sector. For example, you have here some fermions that couples to, so these are your quarks, for example, and then you have some fields, heavy fields, that couple to that sector, and here you have the Suzy breaking. So you radiatively communicate Suzy breaking to the southern group. And that appears to give the right behavior. Now, there are other things you need to be careful about. And this is a huge, again, we don't have time to discuss more details about this, but that's the general idea that people use. So when you write Suzy breaking, when you talk about Suzy breaking, there is only specific terms that are allowed. So going back to the original supermultiplets that we write, and now we're talking about the scalar fields. So if you have two scalar multiples, you can write this term. You can write masses for the scalar fields. You can write masses for the Gegenos, okay? And this is not a coupling now, these are the Gegeno masses, because these are adjoints and these are Majorana masses for these particles. And then you can write what is known as an A term. Okay? Now, question for you guys. Can I write something that has some coupling, let's say Yukawa, times phi prime, phi double prime, phi, and phi triple prime? Am I allowed to write this? Something like that for soft terms. So we need to break Suzy in a way that doesn't reproduce the quadratic divergences, right? So if I'm allowed to write the term like this, it means that you see the diagrams that we wrote up there before that make sure that the Higgs quadratic divergences are cancelled, okay? So that means that I change, for example, the coupling of the scalars to the Higgs, the stops, if I add a term like this. So the moment they do that, the quadratic divergences don't cancel. So I get reintroduce my sensitivity to the UV physics. So this term you cannot have, because this is not what is heartbreaking. Not heartbreaking, but heartbreaking. So this is heartbreaking of the symmetry. So this will reintroduce a lambda UV dependence. Okay, so you don't want that. The other thing you can write down in principle is something that looks like this. So in principle, there is, so this has mass dimension squared in the Lagrangian. This has mass dimension squared again. This has mass dimension, and this is also mass dimension. So these are the A terms. Now, in principle, one could write a term that looks like this, some constant C, a funny A term that looks like this. Turns out, terms like this are also of the same category, heartbreaking of the symmetry, because if I write this down, I can have tadpole diagrams, and these are quadratically divergent, these are reintroduced UV dependence as well. So this is not good. Okay? So this I cannot write down. So you have to be careful when you break Suzy not to break it in a very bad way and reintroduce your divergences. Turns out because of the gauge interactions of the standard model, this is not hard to do. Okay, the standard model interactions forbids many of the bad couplings, and there are ways people over the years. Actually, many ways, from gauge mediation, gravity mediation, anomaly mediation, all sorts of mediation schemes to break Suzy. Okay, so people have engineered ways to do that consistently. Now, okay, so let's start talking about more details about Suzy phenomenology. Okay, so. This tells you that all of these terms, in order to explain the phenomenology that they see, they roughly have to be at the TV scale. So now let's talk more about Suzy phenomenology. Okay? And let's start by talking about the Higgs. So the Higgs is the particle that we introduced all of this stuff in the first place. Okay? So if you look up there back to our superpotential, you will see that the Higgs quartic, let's talk about how the Higgs interacts in Suzy. So if you look at the Higgs quartic, it is contained in this term right here, this the absolute value of the derivative of the superpotential with respect to phi. Okay? No.
What am I talking about? Where are the other stuff?
Here. No, sorry. The Higgs quartic, no, that will introduce the coupling to the squarks. So the Higgs quartic is here. And it's related. Sorry about that. And it's related to the gauge couplings. Okay? So. So that means that when you write down the Higgs quartic is fixed. And it's fixed basically by gauge invariance in Suzy. So when you calculate the Higgs mass in supersymmetry, because the quartic and the Higgs, we need to fix the Higgs VEF to 245 GeV. So we fix V fixed, V of the Higgs is fixed at 245 GeV to explain the mass of the W and the Z boson. You find that the Higgs mass squared has the maximum value it can take is actually 90 GeV squared. Does someone remember the mass of the Higgs that the LHC measured? 125. Do they match? Nope. So that means we need to change the Suzy prediction of the Higgs mass in order to explain what we see. So this does not agree with data. Okay.
How do we get the maximum? How do we know that it's the maximum?
What? Yes?
How do we get that bound?
So we get that bound because the quartic is determined by the determined coupling. So there is no, the quartic in SUSY is not a free parameter like in the standard model where you take the lambda and then the mass is lambda v squared. It's related to the gauge couplings. Okay? So that's why. You're just at tree level, okay? So what do people do? So you need to introduce radiative corrections. The only way, other degree, you cannot write it by hand because this would be breaking of supersymmetry, okay? So what you do is, there are two diagrams here. You renormalize it by taking into account the quarks, the leptons that have the leptons, the fermions of the standard model that have the biggest coupling. And those are the tops. Okay? So you take the top here and then you have white top, all four here. And this is the Higgs. Okay? But then you also have diagrams that look like this, where these are the stops. Okay? If I just had both of these things introduce a correction to the Higgs quartic that goes like y top squared to the fourth, 16 pi squared. Okay? First of all, notice that this is a small number. The Yukawa of the top is order 1. This is 1/100th. So the way you recover some is from the log. And of course there is the charging fact, there is a 3-4 here that has to do with the fact that tops are colored particles, so there is more degrees of freedom running in the loop. Okay? Now the problem is SUSY itself. So in a theory that didn't have sparticles, this would be a renormalization. So this would be log sensitive. So you would have the cutoff of the theory over m top squared. And then you make the cutoff large, great, you get this large correction, and then you're happy because you can predict the Higgs mass. Well, we cannot do that in SUSY. In SUSY, this term has to go like the ratio of the stop mass to the top mass squared. Because the same thing that was canceling the quadratic divergences, this has a minus sign relative to this guy. Okay? This is known as the little hierarchy problem. So in fact, it tells you that you have to make the stops heavier than you thought. You have to put them in the multi-TeV range to explain the value of the Higgs that you measure because of the quartic. And that's a problem, because the moment you start making this guy heavy to fix this problem, you introduce corrections to the Higgs mass due to the regular diagrams. So you're in a pickle. So it introduces the problem you were trying to solve. It solves most of it. Okay, you don't have sensitivity no longer to the Planck scale, but you have little tunings, basically because of the experimental constraints. And this is roughly a percent tuning. This is what is known as little hierarchy problem, and people have, and this is ugly engineering that we're talking about, that people have tried to fix it, okay? So that's one thing, and alarm bells start going off slowly for poor SUSY. So let's raise this up. There, put them there. Now, other, let's say, signatures, or as it turns out, it will be issues because we haven't seen anything yet with SUSY. So if you just have the SUSY, the supersymmetric theory, the Yukawas of the standard model are the same, these Yukawas are the same what you know from the standard model. Okay? So any flavor processes, any flavor violation that you knew from the standard model does not change. If you remember from your, did you talk about KK bar mixing in your standard model class? Oh, you did not. Did you talk about the flavor violation due to W? No, you didn't do that. Okay, next Wednesday, Claudia will teach you all about that because we only have 5 minutes today though. So in the standard model, actually, a very important process of the standard model that explained a lot about the structure of flavor of the standard model, that helped people understand a lot about the flavor structure, is the following. So there is this guy called KM, which is a meson of QCD, and it's made out of a down-type quark and a strange quark. Okay? So it's, let me just write this up. Okay, here, so we have D, S bar, this is the kaon, my right gang, I think this is the kaon, right? It's not the kaon, but K bar. And then you have W, then you have the up, strange, top here going in the loop, then you have the charge W here, and then you come out with strange coming out. So what does this do? It changes, so because you start with anti-strange and you end up with a strange, it changes strangeness by 2. So this is a flavor violating process. Now, I won't explain this to you, but the key point here, this is only mediated by the charge W's, the W boson in the standard model. It's a charge current interaction. So, and people have measured, I mean, a lot of the kaon system, actually, it's a beautiful piece of physics that people have studied for quite some time, and it has been a very important probe, as you will see, of beyond the standard model processes. Now, I've added new particles, okay? If I didn't break SUSY, these interactions will remain the same, and I just have WINO here, and I have the scalar particles here, so there's no new contributions to this process. But because I've broken SUSY, you see, for example, that I have those funny A terms that can look exactly like Yukawa couplings between the scalar particles. So I can have the Higgs with a squark, uptype squarks, and these don't have to be the same anymore as the ordinary Yukawas. So that means I introduce new sources of flavor violation. Okay, and this is a key thing. So flavor processes are a very sensitive probe because in the standard model they are small. So if you have anything new added to them, they will show up very quickly. Okay, so the fact that we haven't seen no new flavor violation. Is evidence against SUSY, okay? There is other diagrams, for example, that appear, and have you heard of the G-2? Okay, so you know the G-2. So here in the standard model, so in SUSY, you will have new contributions to G-2. So you have diagram, for example, for the muon, just to name a random particle. So you have a muon here, and you have now diagrams that involve the muon or the muon's neutrino with a WINO going through the loop and then a photon emitted. Okay? So diagram like this will contribute to the G-2 of the muon and the electron. They will also, if you have CP violation, because these parameters also have CP violating phases in them, they will contribute to electric dipole moments. So these are so-called precision tests of the standard model. And again, no evidence of the standard model, even though for the G-2 of the muon, if you may have heard from the news, there is evidence of a little anomaly there, which could be good news finally for SUSY. Okay? Or BSM physics in general. But overall, so far, we've done some tests, and there's no SUSY anywhere. Okay? So,
and we land here.
So, the question is, where is Susie? And I know that so far in this class, told you about guts last time, proton decay, and I told you, I haven't told you anything very optimistic. So, gang will hate me for this, but we'll change up the next lecture. I'm not going to talk about extra dimensions yet. Okay? I'll talk about a version of Susie that may actually be compatible with data and may explain some nice things. So, I'll talk about split next time. Split supersymmetry. And I'll also talk a bit about the cosmological constant problem because they are all now related. So next time is going to be a special topic seminar because I want to give you something a bit more optimistic, even though it may be sound crazy to some. I want to tell you something that gives you, oh, supersymmetry is great, so pretty, but we haven't seen it. Oh, what's happening? Guts were so pretty, but we haven't seen proton decay. Oh, what's happening? So next, I'll try to talk about something more positive next time, okay? So thank you, guys.